We celebrate summertime on this edition of On the Mark with Mark Carmen. I spent the weekend in northern Michigan at Boyne Mountain Resort. Two tennis pros, my coaches from the week, are on the show. That's right, Bill and Larry. Larry was a stud at Michigan State. We're giving tips on the program. Also, a story from off the field. Danny Farquhar, who collapsed in the dugout last April in Chicago, a brain hemorrhage, was just released by the New York Yankees. He is segueing into a coaching career at 32 years old. He tells some of his story today on the show. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. And Ethan Blumenthal and I talk about our seven favorite things about summertime. On the Mark with Mark Carmen starts right now. So I was up in Michigan. Ashley Young, good to see you. Did you miss me?
I miss you so much.
Like, talk about how you miss me the most. What was the biggest thing that you felt a void in your life from?
The office is quiet without you. You know, no one brings that Mark Carmen energy to the office.
I'm like loud office guy.
In the best, most wonderful way, yes. Loud office guy.
Thank you so much. So I haven't seen you in a while. Mm-hmm. I left out of here and I have not shaved, so I got this whole beard thing going on here.
We got beard watch. Anyone that doesn't follow Carm on Instagram, he was posting Instagram stories the entire time he was away, and the beard got progressively darker and fuller as time went on.
And grayer and older, and I just aged myself, I think, by like 10 years.
I thought you had like the backwards hat on. I thought you looked younger.
You thought with the backwards hat I looked
backward younger. Backward hat and the beard, yeah.
But now, no backwards hat. The hair is long. Haven't had a cut
the
in forever.
The hair is a little long,
okay,
yeah.
So we need a cut. But now, normally I would go with the color. I know people care about this deeply. If I color my hair, then it's not going to match up on the beard. This seems like a lot of maintenance, Ashley.
It's a lot of maintenance, but I also dye my hair, so I feel for you.
Okay. All right.
You know, it's part of the process.
We'll have to figure it out. So I was competing, as you know, against 14-year-olds and 16-year-olds. Did you have any judgments on this?
I did. I thought it was weird. I didn't know who these children were on your Instagram story, but you were playing tennis against teenage boys?
It was the Boyne Mountain Tennis Camp. This was year two that I participated. Last year, I won the doubles. Mm-hmm. This year, didn't get to partake in the doubles because it was in the afternoon, and my lovely fiance Chelsea wanted some pool time, and I felt like I should enjoy it. But I made it to the finals in singles, which I did not make last year. Lost to the great Garrett, who is going to Michigan State and is going to play club. So, I mean, he's a legit player here now.
He's a D1 athlete. At the club level.
At the club level. So that's not a terrible loss. What was unfortunate, if I may, I came back late Friday night, and then Saturday, all summer long, I've been playing the Shoreline Tennis League, and it was the final match of the season. And I was matched up against rough and tumble Maury. Now, Maury was not 14, 16, or 18. He was actually like 72. So we got old Maury, and now the sirens. I don't know if people can hear that, but there are sirens going off in the background, which makes sense for this situation. Maury, I played him last year, and I beat him, but he gave me a little bit of run for my money in the final set. So
I thought you were going to say he had a heart attack with the sirens.
No. Maury didn't die. Maury's well alive. But it was 7-7 in the third set. He won the first set. I won the second. We're playing a 10-point tiebreak. It was actually 7-6. I was winning. And Maury hits a shot down the line. My brother's come over from his match. He's watching me. I'm trying to give great effort. I run over to the line to get try to get a racket on it. I have no chance at it, but I'm still trying. And as I'm running over, out goes the hamstring. Shot in the back of the leg. Down I go. I'm laying in the prone position on the tennis court. And there's 72-year-old Maury standing over me. He's still ready to play. I can't walk, have to default the match, lose the match. We end up finishing in second place in the league. If I had won, I think we would have won the league. So I lost to a 72-year-old after playing 14-year-olds, disappointed myself, disappointed the team.
What about Chelsea? Was she embarrassed?
I don't think Chelsea cared. So that happened. The point of going to tennis camp is you come back and you're better, and somehow I might have gotten worse.
Well, maybe Maury's just that good.
Maury's not that good. I mean, Maury's okay. Maury's decent.
Backpedaling.
But Maury's a fine fine 72-year-old player, mm-hmm. and I give Maury tons of credit, but I should beat Maury.
So how's the hammy today?
I'm coming over here today, and normally I would walk, and mm-hmm. I had to take an Uber because I can't walk. So it's problematic. I think I'm out for at least 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yep. Yeah, and so it makes it tough to do a podcast. I'd like to get, can I get any points for, you know, hanging in here?
Oh, for sure. For sure. We're trying new stuff.
Okay.
Trying new stuff today.
Well, speaking of new stuff, we've got you, sat down with Jim Gaffigan.
I did. So while Mark was away, I had some big shoes to fill, and I got to sit down and interview Jim Gaffigan.
Who's Jim Gaffigan, for those who don't know?
Big time comedian. You've probably seen him. He's made a ton of cameos. He had his own show, and he is doing a new movie called Them That Follow, and I did not read the emails and just went right to watching the movie because I thought it would be a comedy. It is a grisly, dark drama.
Wow.
Spoiler. In the movie, he saws off his son's arm.
What?
It is disturbing. It's disgusting. There's a lot of snakes. It's about this community that lives in like the mountains, and they're a very devout religious community, and they believe that snakes answer whether like someone has sinned or if they're pure. So when someone commits a sin, they put this like giant snake on them. And if the snake bites them, then like they're paying for their sins. But if the snake doesn't bite them, then they're like wholesome. I don't know. Very strange, very disturbing. And Jim Gaffigan comes at the in at the end and like saws off. He like turns around with like one of those like chainsaws, like and saws off his son's arm. So here I thought I was interviewing Jim Gaffigan. It was going to be fun and playful. And we talked a lot about religion and this movie he's promoting. Great movie.
Was the arm infected, or is that just the
Jim
Gaffigan?
Yeah, it got bit by a snake, and he didn't go rogue. I think it was him implementing the best medical practices he knew, but the prayers didn't cure the snake venom.
Okay.
I don't think that's too much of a spoiler.
Okay, this is that's a big right turn for Jim Gaffigan. Every time I've seen him do radio, I've seen him on late night TV.
Mm-hmm.
He's a funny guy, Jim Gaffigan.
He is. He's the Hot Pocket guy.
Will we laugh once in this interview?
Perhaps. I was digging, but he was great to talk to. He's a funny guy, and it was really interesting to see him do something more serious.
Talented, smart, all of it. So mm-hmm. Why don't we hear that? Let's hear you and Jim Gaffigan.
Jim, you're best known for your comedy. I don't want to give too much away, but this movie is far from comedic. Who do you play in this movie, and what can we expect as an audience from the film?
Well, I play Zeke, who is part of a deeply religious Pentecostal community in Appalachia that believes in snake healing. And I am married to Olivia Colman, and we have a child named Tom who is played by Thomas Mann. And this movie it's a rather serious look at I think it's about the relationship between parents and children, and because the pastor in this tight-knit community is played by Walton Goggins, and he has a daughter played by Alice Engard, and there is kind of these snake healing communities are, you know, they're out of necessity, they're rather secluded and confined because, it can have dire consequences associated with this form of worship, I would say. And so the movie kind of looks at these two young people that are kind of finding their way in their living in their parents' worlds, and who they want to be and what they want to believe in is kind of looked at through the movie. And it's definitely a drama. It's definitely heavy. But it was so fun as an actor to climb into this character and work with these amazing actors in this movie.
Was it easy to make the transition? And more importantly, I can't get over the snakes. Are you a big snake guy?
Well, here's what the transition You know, like, comedians are, you know, relatively serious people anyway. I mean, I can, you know, it's like they're just serious people that want approval, I would suppose. But the snake thing is, these are not snakes that we were walking through the woods and just decided to pick up and play with. These were, you know, there was a snake wrangler, and they would, you know, they were snake experts, and they were like, this is a blankety blank snake, and it's not poisonous, and or it's been defanged or whatever. So, you know, holding a snake, it's a little bit like the equivalent of going to a petting zoo. You know, you're not under risk of death. I mean, obviously in this movie, we're portraying, you know, a very dire, dangerous situations. But, you know, as an actor, I knew that the snakes I was holding were not going to kill me. So there was in the back of my mind, like, you know, these snakes look similar, so like maybe this is one of the poisonous ones. But I don't know. You gotta trust. And also, they're, I mean, I like animals, so it was kind of interesting to hold a snake and kind of. It's weird. Again, it's like I always describe it. It's not like we were walking in the woods and we came upon a snake. This was some. A handler that was like, this is a blah 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 type of snake, and the snakes had names, so it wasn't scary.
So you got to know the snakes. You're a lot braver than I am. You mentioned the cast that you worked with, though. Someone you worked with is Olivia Colman, who recently won an Oscar, and she plays also a very dark, sinister character. What was it like working with Olivia, and what's she like off the set?
You know, Olivia is, if you've seen Broadchurch, obviously she's acting in that, but she's a very warm, open person. And so this movie, Them That Follow, is really heavy. It's a heavy drama, very serious. But everyone involved with the movie is a rather kind of... They're all kind of like, they can turn the serious on and then they can be silly and fun. So we would have these really serious days, and then we would drive an hour and a half back to Youngstown, Ohio. And in those van rides, we would be, you know, goofing around. And it was, you know, for this movie, we constructed this kind of tiny community. And then you can turn off the seriousness, but in a way you can't turn off that community. So we definitely had some fun afterwards. And, you know, there was this intentional, okay, we have to, instead of life and death, let's just be silly in a van. And then, you know, hang out after that too.
I learned that in addition to acting and comedy, you have a little football under your belt. You played at Georgetown with Eagles defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz.
Yes.
And I watched an interview where he said your brother is actually funnier than you.
Yeah, you know, that's, by the way, the joke in my family, I'm one of four boys, and I'm considered, four boys and two girls, and I'm considered third funniest in my family. But I always say, I have more comedy specials than them. But, you know, yeah. You know, my brothers are very funny. But you know what? They didn't have the heart. They didn't have the drive to pursue their dreams. No, well, they, you know, they're funny. But I also think that I'm kind of a combination of my different brothers' sensibilities. You know, like my brother Mike is very dark and sarcastic, and my brother Joe is kind of silly and goofy, and then my brother Mitch is kind of an observational kind of guy. So I'm kind of a combination of all of them.
Do you miss playing football at all?
Well, I don't miss the two-a-day practices in August in Washington, D.C., that's for sure. I mean, football was so much of an identity of me, but... You know, I quit my junior year. You know, I was like, I had a nightmare, and I was like, all right, I got to quit. Because I was just dreading it, and I wasn't having fun. And, So it's weird. I have this very complex relationship with football. I think I learned a lot, and you know, my fingers have scars all over them because of it. But you know, I don't know. It's weird. I love it, but like there were a couple of years where I couldn't watch it. I was just so sick of it.
You were just over in Europe touring. You had the whole family with you, the squad. What was the highlight of that trip for you?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. You know, traveling, I've got five kids, so traveling with my family is, it's the most expensive thing you can ever do, but it's also, when you're in another country, it's also just, it's just you and your family. So there is kind of this great bonding that occurs, but also we spent some time in Ireland and we have friends, and this is our second time going to Donegal, which is just an amazing place. It's so kind of isolated. So, I mean, it's even isolated than Ireland. So, that was kind of a special place. So kind of, I feel like we kind of snuck into this community in Donegal, and we kind of, you know, they were so open, and so hanging out with them is very kind of special. You know, my kids going to camp there even for the week was amazing.
Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. For anyone that wants to go catch Them That Follow, it's in theaters August 2nd.
Had a great week last week, took some time off, went up to Boyne City, Michigan and the Boyne Mountain Resort, and I participated for the second year in a row in the tennis camp. It was 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds, maybe there was one 19-year-old, and me, and maybe a handful of other adults who would come and maybe do the morning session. But then in the afternoon, when the real tennis diehards came out there, it was me and the kids. And I had a ton of fun. Friday, they do a tournament, singles tournament, and I was matched up against Evan, and I was matched up after that victory, took out Evan 8-4. Then I was matched up against JP. JP just didn't have it, took him out easily. And then I had to play a kid who could play like D2 or D3, but he's going D1 to Michigan State because he's wants to be a physicist or something of an intellectual power that I don't have myself. He's like, yeah, you know, I think I'm better at physics than I am at tennis. I don't say that with a big ego. I'm like, no, dude, that's cool. I get it. There's people like you in life who are just born to be successful, and you're one of them, and you just whip me on the tennis court. But let me just say to everybody out there, it is okay to, at least for a little bit, to go back to just being a kid. Get some play in your life. Get on the swing set. Go to a tennis camp. Do some childlike stuff. Don't take life so seriously. I know we're all grinding all the time. It was great to be up there. And also respect your elders. I had two coaches up there who were running the camp. Head coach Bill Perlmutter and head coach Larry Stark. And I want to bring them both in here. And let's get a professional review for how I did taking on the youth of America, living my best life on vacation, unplugging for a second from the media world, and playing tennis at tennis camp. Bill, Larry, thank you for joining On the Mark. We appreciate having you on the podcast. Bill, I want to start with you. You saw me last year. I was working hard, but I lost in the singles, forget to who, but he whipped me. And I won the doubles with my guy, Harry. Unfortunately, this year, I was unable to defend the title with Harry because we had some other things we had to do that afternoon. But I did make it to the finals in singles. I would like to get your honest review on if you think I'm getting better, what I could have perhaps done better this year to beat young Garrett this year, which I did not do. Are you seeing progress? What are the next steps for me? Bill, you go first.
I think you've become more intelligent on the court, and the kid you played today was All-State honorable mention. So that was a tough road to hoe.
See, now, you guys made the bracket, and you gave me a bye in the first round. Not many people had a bye. And then you matched me up with, I think you knew that Evan was going to win. And then I think you saw that JP was going to be there. In my mind, you created an easy road for me to get to the finals. Am I wrong about this? Larry, what would you say?
I'd say you're wrong about that. JP 6'5 and hits a serve 110 to 120 miles an hour, and you played excellently to get through the semifinals. I think that you did a great job.
Wow, this is a big moment for me. All right, I'm getting validated here. I feel better. Bill, what do you think I can do to raise my game to the next level to compete with a Garrett who took me out 6-1, and I'm not quite certain that he broke a sweat?
Well, one of the problems that we can't fix is we're all a little older than Garrett is, seeing that he's a 17-year-old phenom. But having said that, I say the same thing most of the time. It's timing and feet. Timing of the feet, timing of the racket. It's always feet and timing.
Larry, just to give some background here, I should give bios here. I said Michigan State, but Larry, you played, what, number one doubles and number one singles?
Yes, way back when I played number one singles and doubles for Michigan State University.
He was also a team captain. He didn't even mention that.
You guys have been friends for how many years?
About 60.
Did you compete against each other on the court back in the day?
We were on the same high school team. Yeah. We played for Berkeley High School.
And who won?
Larry.
Did you get a game off him, Coach Bill, or was it just a complete demolition, if you will?
Over the years, I've gotten games here and there, although we should tell your listeners, Larry and his young protege, Joe, did go down to us in split sets, but then we walked away with a strong finish in the tiebreaker to take the match just the other day. He played great.
That's true. Me and you played doubles against Larry and his partner, and we handled him. It was flat out. There was no problem. All right. As we wrap up here, you guys made me emotional today. You gave me the MVP award. Can you just please tell the listeners why Mark Carmen deserved the MVP of this week's tournament?
Larry, go first.
You played guys that were over half your age, and you hung with them. You got to the finals of the tournament, and Mark, you've got a sport for a lifetime. You're playing great tennis.
Thanks, Larry. Bill.
And I will just have to say, Mark, it's your personality, your energy, your enthusiasm, and the effort that you put in on every ball is infectious throughout the entire academy every day. And how could we not give you the MVP?
Well, just for real, I'm getting emotional again right here. But and I can't wait for next season, by the way, or next year, come summertime, year three up at Boyne Mountain. But just for real, to your guys' credit, the kids that you're coaching there, these were great kids with positive attitude, and you have a way about you that I think brings the best out of them. So it was really a pleasure to watch. It's so competitive nowadays for kids playing these games and their parents wanting so much for them, and are you going to get a scholarship and all that on the line. So to see kids in this environment for a week trying to get better and having fun, it was beautiful. So you both get gold stars for what you're doing for the youth of America. And thank you for allowing me to be a part of it this week, and along with my fiance Chelsea. Thanks so much, guys, and thanks for being on tonight.
Looking forward to seeing you and having you up next year.
Thank you to Bill and Larry for the coaching and for jumping on the podcast. One of the pieces of news last week was a guy retiring from baseball. Danny Farquhar was released by the New York Yankees AAA affiliate. And Danny's been in the big leagues for 7 years, made many stops. His last stop before the Yankees was with the Chicago White Sox. And he collapsed in the dugout in a game last April, a brain hemorrhage that could have taken his life, and it could have cost him his speech or his ability to walk. But none of that happened. He thinks clearly,
and he has full capacity to move around and live his life. He was trying to get back on the baseball field, but that was not happening. He could not rise himself back up in the competitive world of professional baseball. And after getting released, he decided to retire. So I wanted to catch up with Danny. 32 years old, right? You want to continue your career, and now he's in transition. And he's decided to go into coaching, which I think is a sweet decision. You've been around the sport your entire life. Why not give back? And it'll probably give you a lot of joy to continue to be around it and hopefully have an impact. Let's bring Danny into the conversation now. And Danny, you've made this decision. I think it's great that you're staying in the game. But it can't be easy knowing that you don't get to wake up every day and do what you've loved to do for your entire adult and childhood life. I mean, that's a huge change, and I'm sure it takes a pretty big adjustment for you to just settle into, okay, this is what I'm doing going forward.
You know, some days are a little bit tougher than others when you're like, oh, I can go back out there and play. You know, I can do this because I still have that, you know, that drive to want to be the best at whatever I'm doing, whether it's golf, baseball, coaching, whatever it is. But, you know, then I reflect on, you know, my time, you know, in the off season. I started playing catch in June of last year, and just, I had, you know, full off season to really build my strength back and to just, you know, get back to baseball. And I got to spring training, and clearly I was way farther behind than I thought. So they gave me time and extended to really just get me back in my flow. And I felt like before they sent me to AAA, like I was peaked out. Like I had been peaking for about a month, and you know, I got to AAA, and I realized how far behind I was to all the AAA guys. And they released me, and I got a chance to reflect on the drive home. And it was one of those where, you know, you gotta realize, you know, when it's time to hang it up. And me and my wife chatted, and we've been talking about, you know, wanting to be a coach for a while, and so we came to that decision.
So okay, you're on the drive from Wilkes, you're on the drive basically from Pennsylvania right all the way across country where you live in California. At what point does this conversation start? Have we hit Illinois? Are we in Montana? I don't know your exact path here, but when did the conversation start? And then I'm just curious. You know, that's a difficult thing to go through. And there you are with your wife, and you guys have been through a lot, and you got three kids, and you know everything that happened last year. I'm curious what you can tell us about what that conversation was like.
So we actually took the south route because we lived in Louisiana before that, and we wanted to visit some friends. And my sister was actually vacationing in North Carolina, so we stopped and saw her too. So we took the south route, and you know, I've been throwing a little bit, you know, against the beds and going to the hotel gyms and working out a little bit. And I actually threw a bullpen with one of my friends in Louisiana. It was almost like after that trip, we spent 4 days in Louisiana, that like, you know, I stopped throwing, I stopped working out. And that's when we started communicating more, when I was just like, you know, this is a lot of work, a lot of energy. I put, you know, all this effort into it, you know, and I'm starting to think about like, hey, you know, what if, you know, I'm thinking about this being the end. So it was pretty far into the trip, but you know, we got the ball rolling, and you know, I'm very happy with the decision that I made, and I'm excited for the next step and moving forward.
So moving forward, it looks like some AA action, huh? And you got Omar down there, who one of the greatest shortstops, certainly defensively, in the history of the game, managing the Barons, and you've got Richard Dotson, who knows a thing or two about pitching. And you're going to be kind of, I guess, hanging out and trying to figure out if this is for you. Is that about accurate?
Yes. I'm definitely going there to just learn from the other side and just kind of see what a coach's you know, routine is. And I'm definitely going there to learn and see what the coaching side is all about. And then, you know, and then obviously Chris has told me like he's very open to kind of what I like and what I don't like, and you know, we'll obviously revisit that when we get to instructs and see what I like to do. So I'm just I'm just thrilled for this opportunity more than anything.
I mean, you've got all these guys around your age, Chris Getz, Everett Tiford. I mean, these were guys who had big league careers and had to make a decision at some point themselves. You know what? It's time to move forward. So I'm sure there's conversation that can be had. They probably understand exactly where you're at.
Yes, and I have a good buddy here in town, Alan Craig, who he's working with the Padres, and he was over our house last night. And, you know, just chatting with him about his transition, because he was a player in spring training. And then at the end of spring training, we didn't break with the team. He wanted to go into front office / coaching work. And, you know, we had a good talk last night about the transition phase. So it's nice to surround yourself with people who've done it and, you know, that you have that little support system with you. And the baseball community is so small and so supportive. Like, it's an incredible community.
I'm curious, how much do you think about last April and the brain aneurysm? And I know you don't remember that night, but I'm sure you remember all the recovery and trying to get yourself back to just living a normal life. And you know, it's got to feel on one side, right, that this is disappointing that it's impacted my career. But on the other side, people that have that injury, they end up in a lot worse shape than where you're at right now.
Yes, so I do reflect on it. I would say daily when I wake up in the morning, see the sun shining, it's just one of those where I'm like, dang, I am so thankful to be here. And, you know, I thank God every day for, you know, giving me the opportunity just to get back on the field and, you know, not have no regrets, you know, about my playing career, about my injury. So, but I definitely look at it in a positive way, just because, you know, it is a sad story, but in the end, like, I'm here, I'm alive, I'm healthy. So there's not that much sad that comes from it. More just positive and how I can help inspire people that are going through their troubled times. Anybody who wants to talk to me, like, about things they're going through, like, you know, I love it. And any sort of insight I can give them, I'm more than willing to help.
Well, it's one of the reasons, I think, why the White Sox are interested in having you as part of the organization, because guys are going to have their ups and downs. And you, I mean, you certainly have had yours. And that's, I think, that's being more and more accepted in the game, right, to talk about actually what's going on in the head versus just got to go out there and grind it, man. Like that level of coaching is cool, but there's got to be a little bit more, too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I bring. One of my big assets is the mental part of the game, because I've struggled at every level in the minor leagues. I've struggled in the big leagues. Like, I've just been through these struggles. And no, I'm not to say like I know how to get through anything, but I've been through a lot. So maybe I can help guide people, like, you know, some of the things that help me cope with failure, and maybe it can help them, and maybe I can learn from the players, you know, how they're coping through failure. So I'm just so excited to get going.
Hey, Danny, my name is Bill Smith. I just gave up 3 runs in my 1 inning last night, and I can't sleep tonight, and I'm worried that Skip is going to call my name again today. I don't think I can go out there. What do you say to a guy like that? Because that's got to be spot on to some conversations, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing for me, and I realized it throughout my career, was just go watch video. And honestly, the biggest recommendation is you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are when you watch that video. Like, you know, there'll be times when you strike a guy out and it was like, you know, pitch right down the middle and they took it for some reason. And then you're like, oh, I'm so good. And then there'll be another time where you made a pretty good pitch and the dude just, he took a lucky swing and hit off the end of the bat and it bled in for a single, a 2-run single. And it's just, you know, baseball is one of those games that you can only control so much. You can only control the preparation and the work that you're putting into it. And, you know, the sun will rise the next day and you'll be able to get back out there and you'll be able to compete again. And, you know, you can't play this game forever, so give it your all. That would be my best advice to the guy.
Yeah, no, I hear it. You're a Florida guy, right? Was this always the dream to be in the big leagues and doing what you were able to do for the 7 years?
Yes, that was my dream since I was, I think, 5 years old, and the Marlins you know, the Marlins were announced as a team, I think when I was maybe 4 years old, and I was like, Dad, I want to go play baseball. And he's like, okay. And then, you know, my whole childhood, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a Major League Baseball player. And they're like, you know, that's so cute. What do you really want to be? And I'm like, a baseball player. Like, I want to be a Major League Baseball player. And, you know, only a certain amount of people can do it. But that was my plan from when I was a kid. It was plan A. I never had a plan B. And I think that was an asset that I had in my head, was just didn't have a fallback plan. And, you know, and I was moving forward all the way through high school, through college, got into pro ball. You know, I had my mindset.
Yeah. Did you ever read the Player Tribune letter to your younger self stuff? Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
So they're really cool pieces where the older, whatever, you say it's Serena Williams or you could pick anybody from any sport, and they're writing a letter to themselves when they're 10, and they're trying to tell their 10-year-old self, like, hey, this is what's going to happen, and these are some of the decisions that you're going to be forced with, and mom and dad are going to say this. I'm just curious, like, what you would have said to, like, a 10-year-old kid who's saying that, like, Danny now, 32 years old, to your 10-year-old, like, what would you tell that kid who's like, yes, I can do it, that's what I want to be, and some people are going to look at you cross-eyed?
Yeah, I don't think I would change a thing. I mean, I had the support from my parents, you know, when it's like, okay, you want to be a baseball player? All right, we'll provide you, you know, whatever you need, and you got to go out and do it. And, you know, my 10-year-old self was just have fun. Like, yeah, you want to be a baseball player, but never take it too seriously. Just go out and have fun. I can't even tell you how many times we would go, you know, the Little League fields and do home run derbies, and we'd be robbing each other's home runs. And, you know, I don't think I would tell my 10-year-old self to do anything differently. Just enjoy it.
That's cool. Did you play other sports too? I think, like, I'm just thinking about the parents that are listening right now. Like, see, you got to specialize really early. And then you hear from other guys, hey, I played a lot of things, and then I figured out that I'm best at this and I love it the most.
I mean, so middle school, I ran track and I did volleyball. And then, you know, I ran a little cross country in high school. But honestly, like, the game of baseball is the one I enjoyed the most. I had the opportunity to play any sport I wanted to. I did a little bit of flag football. My dad always said that I wasn't allowed to play football until I got into high school because, you know, he wanted my bones to develop and not get hurt as a little kid. And I got to high school, and it was one of those where I was like, man, I'm really good at baseball. Like, I want to focus my fall on baseball so I can go play college baseball. So it was always my decision that I just wanted to play baseball. But I do, you know, with my three kids, you know, my daughter's in dance and gymnastics, and we've given her the opportunity to play soccer. She sat on her soccer ball in the middle of the field. She wanted nothing to do with it. And then my two boys, you know, they're into a little bit of baseball, a little bit of golf. My son's more into Transformers, so maybe they can create a Transformer sport. But so it's one of those where I do think that being well-rounded is good, but if the child just wants to do one, don't say, hey, you have to do other stuff too. You know, I tried piano when I was a kid. I went to one lesson and I said, Mom, can I please not do piano anymore? And that was the end of my piano career.
I outlast you on that one, Danny. I think I did about 6 years of lessons. I made it to Fur Elise, for the record, and I despise the whole process, but and I can't play a note right now. Well, that's not true. I could play Mary Little Lamb. Hey, what do your kids know about what happened to you?
My daughter is the most aware. She'll be 8 here at the end of this month. She knows the most. She still talks about it a lot. She'll bring up, like, when we went to our first baseball game in spring training, she was like, hey, this is our first baseball game since April 20th. And we're like, wow, like, you know, it affects her more than we really, you know, truly understand. And so I think she's got an understanding, and I think it still affects her, but she's a happy little girl. And then my two boys, you know, they're so little that maybe one day they'll see it. But I think it affects my daughter more than anybody.
Do you have a scar that's noticeable?
So the doctors did an incredible job of putting my scar, like just inside my hairline, like kind of tucked away.
Okay.
When my hair does get cut, you can see it, you know, for a couple of days. And my wife cuts my hair because she does an incredible job not to hurt me. And so, you know, if you really stare at me and I'm not wearing a hat, you could probably see a little bit. But honestly, it's not very noticeable. The hair covers it perfect.
You and the wife, Lexi, are high school sweethearts, correct?
Yes.
That's amazing. I mean, she...
Yes, we've been together for, like, I think 16 years now.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Will she talk to you about, like, what it was like for her? I'm assuming she does, I guess.
She's told me a lot, and it's sad because it's just, like, all of her feelings, all of her emotions. You know, when I was, you know, before my surgery and even after my surgery, they didn't know how I was going to respond, whether I was going to have any sort of disability, speech impediment. They didn't know. They didn't know if I was going to make it. And, you know, I was out for the whole thing, so I didn't have to experience all the bad. But my wife and parents, and some extended family as well. My sister was there too, and they had to deal with all the tough, you know, conversations they had with the doctors.
Yeah.
And she talks to me about it. She talks to me about her experience. And I'm not a big fan of talking too much about it because that's all the negative. And I like to funnel out the negative and channel in the good, like the guy from Happy Gilmore. The merry-go-round goes up and down and around. I love that movie.
Let me bring in my guy, Ethan Blumenthal, as we celebrate summer, officially into August, which makes me not sleep as well at night because I start to think about school, even though I'm about to turn 46 and haven't been to school in a long time. But you get that feeling like, oh, no, it's coming around again. So we're going to celebrate summer right now. We're going to do our top seven favorite things about summer. I know that you're going to go off the board here, so I went straight down the middle.
Yeah.
Good to see you, by the way.
Good, yeah, always a pleasure. And you got this. You got a lot of scruff going on here. Carm's rocking the grayish beard.
Yeah, grayish. Grayish. I would call it gray.
Silver. I mean, silver fox over here.
What do you think of the look? Do you think this could launch me to a new level? You don't like it? Wow.
No, I think what you need. I think you just need to clean up the neck a little bit. You know what I mean?
Clean
I think
the
you
neck.
Need to be cleaner, and then I think it could be a look. But it does age you a little bit, though.
It ages me.
Yeah,
flat out.
I'd say like 6 years.
I was up in Boyne Mountain, which I mentioned, mm-hmm. and we were sitting at the bar at one of the fine establishments up there.
Right.
And somebody asked me how old I am, and I said, "Well, how old do you think?" And they're like, "Well, you look like you're 30, but that silver thing you got going on makes me think you're a little bit older." So I took that like, all right, all I do is got to get rid of the silver, and I'm still a 30-year-old, and we're good.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I was happy with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, right. But I think this gives me a little bit more of a distinguished, powerful, he really knows what he's talking about look.
That's what you're going for. Okay.
Right.
All right.
I mean,
yeah, just age wisdom. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look wise.
All right, let's go top seven.
Top seven. So first of all, I want to say that the reason why I wanted to do top seven, you know, I think that, you know, lists of top five or top 10 are a little bit overdone.
Right.
And I'll never forget in high school one time I asked somebody when we were on our way to basketball practice, and I asked Kevin Robinson, I believe, what to rank something for me. And he said, well, he immediately said, well, on a scale of 1 to 7, I'd give it a 5, 5.5. And I was like, wow, that was crazy. Whoever just immediately goes to anything out of 7. But I like that, so I want to take that. And that's what I was thinking about as I texted you and said, I think we should do top 7.
Well, and what I find interesting here is, number one, that Kevin Robinson made the podcast, which is huge for Kevin.
It really is, yeah.
And 7, that's the lucky number for a lot of people who mm-hmm. have lucky numbers. I don't have a lucky number myself. I just live by 23 mm-hmm. for obvious reasons.
Right.
But, you know.
I do enjoy the casino. In craps, is 7 good or bad? I forget now. It's been a while.
You want to roll a 7. So that means that's the pass line.
That's the pass line.
I'm seven and 11.
Is that
no? You want the pass line. Seven's the pass line. I'm 97% certain.
So seven, once you drill the seven, then you can like go and then you start like playing, right?
You can bet the pass line or the no pass,
right?
And then you've got numbers on the board as well.
Yeah,
and you got snake eyes. You got all sorts of things going on up there. Yeah. Very exciting. Craps table.
It is very exciting. But anyways, yeah. So seven's a lucky number then.
You'd be a great craps table dealer if you knew anything about craps.
What kind of look does one need to be a good craps table dealer?
Just a good, solid enthusiasm, bring some entertainment. I mean, you can do a million things in life.
Sure,
you
know, appreciate
that. I don't want to pigeonhole you into the craps table.
So yeah,
a lot of opportunities.
So let's get to it. You want to just go one at a time? So we want to do like one at a time here, or do you want me to do all seven? Or
I don't
one at a time.
We can go one at a time.
I'm doing from seven down.
You're going seven down.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's one thing we did not communicate before. Right. All right. Seven down. I don't know if mine actually have an order,
I'll
try to go seven.
Yeah.
Down.
So number seven for me is barbecues.
Uh huh.
Barbecue, summer barbecue. You know, it's obviously it could be higher on the list. There's a lot of good going on. The problem with the barbecue, the negative is the reason why it's not higher up on the list is because, you know, you're outside, often it's really hot and like it's nice being outside. But like if you're talking about those summer barbecues where it's like 90 degrees and you're just sitting there sweating, and then I'm also a big guy, I like to eat my food like on a table, you know, and on a barbecue, you might end up eating standing up a little bit. I like to just like eat, you know, at a table, and then you know, can walk around with my beer and stuff like that. So that's kind of the negative to the barbecue. But good, you know, I love some good, you know, hot dogs, hamburgers, all that stuff. It's all good stuff. People hanging out, having fun. So those are the good aspects, but it has some negatives to it.
Yeah, barbecue not on my list. Too many people. Too long. You knock down the hot. And a lot of times, I mean, who's ever cooking the barbecue? The food's, you know, sometimes you got a wide variance. So I didn't go with barbecue. I went with the balcony. I like to solo balcony, peaceful summer look. Can't do that in the wintertime in Chicago. No. But you can sit out on the balcony in summertime and really get after it with a nice cigar, have a beautiful night. Not that I've actually done that recently, but I did. Up in Boyne Mountain, did I mention to you that I went to Boyne Mountain?
You have.
I've gone a little. I went to Boyne Mountain. It was awesome. You should really go to Boyne Mountain.
Yeah, look forward to more about it.
Head coach Bill Perlmutter is going to be on the show today, the tennis coach up there. That's coming up in a little bit here. But I did bust out the cigar at the S'mores Pit in Boyne Mountain. Kids are making s'mores. Carm had the cigars from some weird giveaway. They've been in my house for like 2 years. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to bring those cigars up there. We're going to get after it. And then I busted out the cigar, took a couple puffs, and I don't get it. Like, what do you do with the cigar? I just put it right back out, and it was embarrassing that I even did that. I felt like I was the degenerate at Boyne Mountain.
Well, I think that you know, you get better at things, you know, with age. So I think that, you know, I think no one just, you know, looks good and feels good the first time they light up a cigar, you know, it's a process. Now, I do have a question about the cigars. You said they were sitting in your house for 2 years. I know nothing about cigars. Do you think it's the type of thing like wine or alcohol where, you know, it gets better with age, or what do you think?
No, probably not.
Probably not, right?
It probably dried out, but it was in a little tube thing. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was completely bunk, but.
But that did not cause you to not enjoy it as much.
Nah.
It was just because maybe at this point in your life you're not quite the cigar person that you'd like to think you are.
Right. Yeah. I just think I'm, you know, maybe more professional.
Right. Understood.
Something
understood.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go number two.
Yeah. Number
which is number down, six.
Number six. Number six. To me, that's I'm going with the beach. So again, you know, beach can be a fun summer activity. There's a lot wrong with the beach though. You go to the beach and there's sand everywhere, right? When you come back from the beach, right? There's sand everywhere. You bring a bag, there's sand in that bag. Whatever you shoes, there's sand everywhere. And it's annoying to have sand in all these little crevices, like in between your fingernails. I mean, who knows, right? It's everywhere. In your suit, no matter what you did, like there's always sand in your suit. You take it off, another sand all over your house. It's a mess. But, you know, it's nice out. You know, maybe play a little beach volleyball. Maybe throw a football around the beach, jump in the water. People are looking good. You know, the great thing about the beach is it's this weird thing, right, where you go to the beach and, you know, everyone's in their underwear, right? And if we saw them on the underwear on the streets or in a building, we'd say, that's inappropriate. But for some reason, we just, like, cross this line from the sidewalk to the sand, and everyone's just basically naked.
Yeah,
and it's not the worst thing.
No, I think it's fantastic. But I got a couple of problems with the beach.
Yeah, please.
Number one, it's always very difficult to get to the beach. Where are you going to park if you go to the beach? Am I going to ride my bike to the beach? Where am I going to leave the bike if I go to the beach? Am I going to walk to the beach? Now I got to get back from the beach. I mean, the beach is just a pain in the ass.
It's an exhausting process. Getting there, getting back, it's exhausting.
Right. Now I'm going to be hot at the beach. Are you bringing water to the beach? Where's the dude that's running around with the ice cream at the beach?
Right.
Beach is just difficult, which is why my number six is the pool. Because the pool normally has a parking lot. The pool normally has a bar right there if you're going upper level pool. The pool, you got great chairs at the pool. The beach, you're on the ground. There's sand all over your thing. You don't get a clean thing. A lot of pools, too, you got the shower at the pool.
Mm.
So you get a nice, fresh shower afterwards. You feel great. So I go with the pool, number six. I personally like a nice pool in the morning, a good swim. Really feel good about yourself. And late at night pool, you look at the stars. You're getting that flexibility going on. It's a big-time moment
right
there.
I think I haven't been in enough high-class pools in my life where they have the nice bar where it's kind of a nice situation. You just described at night with the stars. I mean, that sounds pretty. That sounds pretty nice. It sounds pretty nice. But in my head, I was thinking beach. And I'm gonna go with beach. I think it offers a lot. And the thing about being hot at the beach though is it's okay. It feels good to be hot because then it feels really good to jump in the lake.
That's true. Water. But see, that's the other thing with the beach. It feels really good to jump in the lake, but a lot of times the lake's freezing, so you're hot as hell, but you don't want to go in because it's miserable. The pool. Pretty standard climate right there. You know, it could be a little bit of a cold pool, but it ain't like a cold beach. You know, that's
true.
So,
here's a question though. I mean, I know we're both Chicago people. You're a born and raised in the suburbs, but I'll forgive you. Are you an ocean person or a lake person?
That's the other thing. With the ocean, I like the ocean, but you know what happens in the ocean? People die in the ocean.
Exactly what I tell people all the time.
Right. People are going to die there. There's fish swimming around.
Right.
It's great, but you can't swim out very far. The lake here, you got some rando dudes on a boat 3 feet off the shore telling you can't go out any further. You know what? And the lake here, who knows what's in that lake?
I mean, who knows what's in the ocean, though? I mean, there's
the same thing. Yeah. Again, the pool.
Pool, nice. Understand. Give me chlorine, understood.
Right.
Number five for me, Friday afternoon drinking. Okay. Mm. So I feel like mostly everyone, whatever you do, Fridays in the summer, right? No one works that hard on Friday in the summer. You know, Cubs play games 120, you know what I mean? But this past Friday, it was a long week, and finally at around 5 o'clock, I was like, you know what? I'm done. I turned my computer, pulled it down, turned it off, and then I just had a cocktail with some friends, and I was like, man, this feels really good, and the sun's still out, and it was a really nice feeling. It's something that you don't get as excited to do in the winter.
No question, and I'd like to say one of the benefits at FanSided is that you get the Friday summer work hours, which is huge, but I'm not going to put that on my list. I'm going to go with walking. I really like walking in the summertime. You wake up in the winter, you don't want to go outside, you don't want to walk, you could slip, you could fall. Summertime, there's no time. It's no bad time to take a walk. Early in the morning, you wake up, you see the sunshine, you're walking around, you feel great. Late in the day, you're walking around, you feel great. If it's even super hot in the middle of the day, take a nice walk, go shade side of the street, you're good. I like a good summertime walk.
That's a huge, huge shout out to the shade side of the street.
Yes.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, unless you're walking around somewhere at, you know, 1 p.m. or noon, there's always going to be one of the sides of the street that's going to be shaded, and it's nice.
And even at noon and 1, if you get really close to a building, you're probably going to be good.
Yeah, probably be shaded. Yeah. That's a huge factor for the walk.
Summer walk.
Yeah. Number four, going to a baseball game.
Ooh.
Love a good baseball game in the summer. Obviously, to me, nothing in the world beats Wrigley Field. I grew up on the south side of the city, though, so I've been to many, many White Sox games. And no matter what you do, where you're going, it's a baseball game. It's fun. The atmosphere, there's not too much that can beat that.
I'm going to join you on number four. Love baseball in the summer. But the key for me, summertime baseball, is you either got to be there to really augment the experience. You either got to be there early when it's quiet in the park and there's some BP going around and the organ's playing and there's just a peace to the park that you don't get at game time. Or my move is afterwards. Everyone leaves the park and it's just quiet and it's peaceful and the guys are coming out with the lawnmower. They're mowing the grass. You get a little sweet smell, all that going on. That
Beautiful. To me.
Like the game of baseball, boring.
Well, okay. All right, we need to get into that. That's a bit of another different podcast, but yeah.
Yeah, ball one, ball eight, ball 10, boring. And, you know, I love baseball, but I would not say that the game itself, it's more, for me, the activity around the game.
Well, I would definitely agree that it's a people can enjoy going to a baseball game without really loving baseball.
Right. I mean, yeah. How often do you actually pay attention to the game when you're there?
Well, I pay attention.
I don't believe you.
Oh, I do. Let's go to a game together.
Do you keep score?
I do not keep score.
How do you stay focused?
I feel like I often go with someone who is keeping, because I care if I'm watching, going to a Cubs game, and I care about every pitch. Every pitch matters. You know, 162 games, but game one matters just as much as game 162.
Where do you sit?
Where do I sit? Oh, so this is a, you know, I grew up going.
Yeah, go ahead.
I grew up going to the game. You know, we'd go get the cheapest possible tickets,
right?
And then you go and sneak down as far as you can, and throughout the game, you spot some empty seats going, out, you know, further up, closer to the field. Then you know, you hightail it over there and you hop in those seats. And that's how I've always done it. I don't know if I've ever really sat in my own seats, to be honest.
We are very, very similar. If you go to a game and you sit in your own seat, it's like you're dead to me.
I don't know if I've ever done that.
How would you not pay for the... Why would you not get the cheapest seat and seat hop your way to glory?
Exactly.
And who cares if you get kicked out?
Right.
But a lot of people don't. They don't have the stomach for that, which I consider those people weak.
Yes, I do. I've been kicked out of many a seat in my life. And I would say, I mean, the pro move, really, and actually I just found this out at Wrigley Field this year, was, you know, they have ushers at Wrigley Field, the mean old ushers. I mean, they're mean, and that's what they live for, is to make sure that people like me can't go down and sit in seats, even though no one's sitting there. And they're making sure that I can't do that. But I found out that if you come from underneath, you know, instead of like coming down the section, you kind of come from underneath from like the 100 level and go up like that, then there's no one there. And you can just go and sit wherever, and then you can go sit in those seats that are right above there, and you're like 10 seats from, you know, from the field.
It's very interesting that you brought that up, because I was going to ask you, do you do the underneath move?
Yeah,
and that, I mean, that's the pride and true.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm all of a sudden there. But I will say this: the Wrigley personnel, even at the aisle as of late, getting a little more lax. You can get through, not to the first 10 rows, but row 10 through 20.
Row 10 through 20, yeah.
Very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And White Sox, they'll grab you and pull you down there.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. And White Sox, you can sit.
You should be coming out to Guaranteed Rate Field more often.
It's a good time. It's a good time.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So that was number...
I think that was number four.
That was four, going to a baseball game. Even though Carm doesn't like baseball,
you want me to lead off with number three?
And I get it. Number three, outdoor physical activities. I know for me and you, tennis is a big one. Can't play tennis in the winter. I mean, you can go play indoors, but it's not the same. But for all those things, you can play beach volleyball. You can go, you know, people play frisbee, you know, baseball if you want to play softball. There's all these things you can do that just no one, you can't do them in the winter. And everyone just is getting, you know, in the winter, it's fat and lazy time.
So my number three, I'll come with you with tennis, but I'd like to, at this point in the podcast, give an ode to Maury. 70-year-old Maury. This was on Saturday, Ethan.
Mm-hmm.
Shoreline Tennis League, Power League, up and down the Glencoes and Highland Parks. These are the tough, rough-and-tumble neighborhoods on Chicago's North Shore. And it was me matched up versus Maury. And this was basically for the championship of the league. And Maury,
I'm on the edge of my seat here.
I know you are. Maury is 70.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and he comes out there, but he's a loose Maury. He's got a nice, good flow to the serve. And I've played Maury before. I beat him last year like 6-0, 7-6, but that 7-6 thing is still in my head.
Right.
Like, I almost lost that set to Maury, man. Mm-hmm. I've been carrying that around in the back of my head. And so I get out there, and I'm like, fuck, this guy's going to give me problems. First set, lose it 7-6 in the tiebreaker 7-3. Feeling terrible. Second set, come back, take it in a tiebreaker. Now I'm in the third set. We've been out there for 17 hours, and we're playing a 10-point tiebreak. It's 7-6, my lead, and Maury's serving to the ad side. He serves it to me. I give it back. Maury goes down the line, forehand side. I got
classic Maury shot.
Classic Maury shot. I got no chance to get it. I sprint over there anyway because my brother had come over from his doubles match. I wanted to impress my bro with my effort.
Yeah.
So I sprint over there. Out goes the hamstring.
Mm.
Right falling down on the court, laying on my back, felt like I was shot, and had to DQ myself because as much as I probably could have limped around on one foot to try to compete with Maury, I at that point, you know, I'm not a professional tennis player. It's probably wise to to not play, and I lost to a 70-year-old to Maury. But I love tennis in the summertime to bring it back, and I look forward to getting Maury next year. Maury, I'm coming after you.
How long are you out for, you think?
I think you know, as we're a couple days past it now, I think I'm on a two weeker.
You and Wilson Contreras, I guess.
Right, and Yoan Moncada.
Yeah, so I know Contreras is getting an MRI tomorrow. You getting an MRI too, or
I haven't got that on the schedule, but I think I should get an MRI.
Sure, I think so too.
I mean, this is very
important. I think the podcast, I think FanSided should pay for it. What do you think?
Well, absolutely.
Was that on the job kind? I mean, you know, it's all part of the process. You're telling the story. It's content.
Right.
You
know? Right. I mean, my life is part of FanSided. Right. So
number two is just everyone outside and being happy. I think that if you come around Chicago in the winter and you've never been, you'd say it's weird that there's all of these places to live and all of these stores, but no one could possibly live here because I've been here for a day and I haven't seen a single person outside, right? Everyone just goes into hibernation in the summer. Everyone's happy, you know, everyone's just looks good. They got color in their face, you know, people, you know, girls aren't wearing clothing, guys aren't wearing clothing. Everyone's in their prime shape, prime time of their lives.
Speaking of not wearing clothing, George, have you been to Lollapalooza this weekend?
I have not, but as I was walking here, I saw a lot of people not wearing any clothing.
Now, why is it that young people nowadays, ages, I'm going to say 15, be generous here, on up to 20, feel like just because it's Lollapalooza weekend, they can literally, like, the dudes aren't wearing shirts and the women are wearing basically nothing, and this is all cool because it's Lollapalooza. Like, if I was a parent, I'd have a heart attack. Are you kidding me? Put on a polo shirt right now, young Steven, and you, Deborah, are not going. I wouldn't let you go in the bathroom with that, let alone go out in public.
Do you think there's a single Deborah out there at Lollapalooza? Because I got to tell you, see, that name aged you a little bit too. Deborah, I feel like that was, you know, if your name's Deborah, you got to be in your 50s. Yeah. At least.
Well, those names are coming back, though. I think that Evelyn is making a resurgence.
Okay.
My aunt Evelyn passed away about 10 years ago, but, you know, that was, you know, it was generally for older people at that point. But I think there's a comeback going on.
All right.
Fred's about to make a comeback.
Sure.
Yeah.
You say so, man.
This is my number two.
Yeah.
My number two, I haven't done it in a while, but I really like a good canoe.
Okay.
When you get in a canoe, you do a J stroke, a C stroke, and I'm thinking about the Boundary Waters. Ever been to the Boundary Waters?
No.
Boundary Waters canoe area. It borders the U.S. and Canada. You cannot put motorized boats in there, only the canoe.
Okay.
And what you do is you get in your canoe, and then you canoe a little while, and then you get to a little bit of an island or whatnot, and then you portage. You pick up the canoe and your pack, and you walk, and then you go to the next lake, and you canoe that lake, and then you find a spot, and then you pitch your tent. And this is an activity for the ages. I highly recommend
it. Sounds like a hell of a trip. Is there stuff to do on the islands? Like, is there?
No. There's moose. Nothing. There's just bears. Okay. There's building fires. There's connecting. You can, you know, do other things for relaxation purposes that are available that you might bring on your own. And you could bring stuff to do, like maybe you're going to bring your mitts, have a little catch, that type of thing, but you're not going to run into a tennis court.
Gotcha. Understood.
Swimming is a thing. There's these lakes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So number one.
Yeah.
Number one, and I think it's without question to me, is ice cream. So, obviously, you can eat ice cream any time of the year, and I will eat ice cream. 20 below zero, we had one of those frozen tundra things that was going on. What do they call that? You know what I'm talking about. But it was super cold.
Polar vortex.
Yeah, right. So, super cold. I'll have ice cream then, but there's really nothing like having ice cream on a summer day. And I eat ice cream. I mean, I had one of those strawberry shortcake bars earlier today.
Yeah.
You know, and because they're just not a bad time. I was like, who cares? You know, I already played tennis today, so I feel like I earned it. Have a little ice cream. And you know what? There's no doubt about it that this evening I'm going to have some more ice cream.
See, for me, I love ice cream. So what you're doing right now is discrediting to ice cream, just putting it in one season. See, for me, ice cream is a year-round event.
Well, I said it was year-round, but it's even more so. I definitely have more ice cream in the summer.
Right. I probably do as well. But so when I was thinking about ice cream on my list, I'm like, I can't just do that to ice cream. So I had to go for my food product. Mm-hmm. I'm going with corn on the cob, a fresh corn on the cob, summertime. On the lake, perhaps, if you're really going upper level, and you put in the pot for like 5 minutes, and you don't even need the butter, you don't even need the salt. It's so good, but you want to add on. Go ahead, and one corn, two corn, so sweet, so delicious, and so just distinct to summertime. Because corn on the cob of the winter, it never tastes as good. It's in a bad package. It's probably got brown all over it. But summertime corn, fresh. That's my number one.
I mean, I have to just disagree hard here. I do love corn on the cob, but corn on the cob, pain in the ass to eat. You pick one bite and you need to floss for like 3 days straight. And that's a huge problem. What I do like is a really nice corn salad, you know? If someone cut the corn up, right, and you toss that in a little salad, maybe a little tomato, a little onion there. I mean, it's a simple thing, and that's really good. You get the sweetness, you crunch that corn, and it's sweet, but to take a bite into it, and then it's all of a sudden, you know, I got to invest in all the floss companies and start just flossing it for days. I can't do it.
See, I hear what you're
saying.
And
then if you don't have floss, oh, the misery. I mean, if you're somewhere and you don't have floss and you take a bite of corn on the cob, I mean, the whole day's over.
Okay,
and so your tongue, right? Your tongue and mouth constantly like, oh, how am I going to get this thing out? You're trying to get out with your fingernails, but you can't. You can't get it. I mean, you're going to make me upset here.
So I hear where you're going, but see, the beauty for me with corn on the cob is that you get to make a mini statement on life, because it's not going to be pretty, and you may spray someone, but the fact of the matter is you're making a statement as you eat that corn on the cob that I am going to enjoy my life right now, and I don't care how it looks. I don't care if there's stuff stuck in my teeth. I don't care if that kernel just smacked you in the eye. My corn on the cob is fresh and delicious, and I'm going after it, and that's how I live my life, like the way I'm eating this corn on the cob.
I just want to say for the record, though, I don't care if I hit anyone with a corn of the cob, okay, with the kernel, okay. I don't care about that. I care about myself, okay, and what's going on with you. But speaking of that, I think it's a good short transition to get to what Baker Mayfield did this weekend.
Sure.
Did you see what he did?
Baker's in the news.
So he's at the Cleveland Indians game wearing a Francisco Lindor jersey, and they show him on TV, and then he like looks at his buddy, and then someone tosses him like from off camera, tosses him a beer. He bites the beer, bites into it, bites it open, and then shotguns the beer. And like in a second, then he tosses the beer down, and then he jumps up and he's screaming and he's getting the crowd hyped, and the Indians like have a little rally and win the game.
See, you're Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a mustache too. I don't know if he's always rocking that mustache, but he was rocking it at the game with a Lindor jersey. To me, it was one of the most bad. I mean, he bit the freaking beer, man. He bit it and then popped it open. It was one of the biggest dick moves I've ever seen.
So okay, I don't want to be old man on the lawn, but I'm just going to be old man
on
the lawn.
Sure, yeah.
Remember at the Milwaukee Bucks game when Aaron Rodgers was sitting courtside, was it the offensive lineman or the defensive lineman?
Yeah, I think like David Bakhtiari.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Bakhtiari. Okay, yeah. So he's just throwing down beers.
Impressively.
But I'm sitting there like, hey, you're a professional athlete. This is a bad example. We don't need to be going to games and chugging beers. And then how are you getting home? This is not good, Bakhtiari. And I thought that Aaron Rodgers being like, you know, hey, let's chill out there, buddy. We are on a pedestal, and that's part of the reason why we make this money. And now you got a guy with Baker who is running around planting flags at KU back in the day, you know, playing for Oklahoma. And I get it. You had a sweet season with the Browns, and the Browns are all of a sudden a playoff contender, maybe even more so than that, year two for Baker. And I think Baker's got a lot of talent. But for me, what I like to see from Baker is a little more of a bottled-up, mature Baker and not a guy who's shotgunning beers like a freaking child like you're in high school. So,
all right. Well, we're going to have to just disagree on that. I think I love it, and I don't think that Aaron Rodgers, you know, there's nothing, obviously, guy can't chug a beer. That's okay. I can't chug a beer either. It's okay. He's still a really good quarterback. But, man, it was a baller move, man. You got to get everyone hyped. You got a stadium of 40,000 people hyped. It's pretty cool. It's been a while since I've done something and then 40,000 people have cheered me on. So, you know,
I hate to be on the anti-fun side, but I'm just anti-fun.
Yeah,
Mark, anti-fun Carmen. Ethan, great to see you, brother.
Always, man.
Time for my final thoughts as we wrap it up here. Two things on my mind. Two more mass shootings this week. Team, can we please do better? I know that the majority of people in this amazing country support more gun control. El Paso, Texas, Dayton, Ohio, I am thinking about you today as we do our final thoughts here. It is unfortunate. It is disgusting. It is gross that we continue to value our wallets more than we value humanity. This should not be a political issue, but it is, and it's unfortunate, and I just really, really, really hope that we'll do better. And another thing, Greenland. You probably haven't been there, neither have I, but the ice sheet is melting, and there is stuff we can do to stop it. Enough with the fossil fuels. We need more electric, less gas. I know we all enjoy living our very comfortable lives. I do too. But I'd also like to hopefully give back to the future when I'm not around. And I know it's very primal for us to want to do exactly what we want to do all the time. But there are things we can do to stop this from happening. And some of you might enjoy going to Miami and San Diego and wherever else along the coast that's not going to exist in our lifetime. Not your kid's lifetime, not your grandkid's lifetime. It could happen in our lifetime. Let us, just fingers crossed, that something, somehow, we can wrap our heads around what's going on and just do better. Thanks for listening to On the Mark. Subscribe, rate, tell a friend. We come out every Monday afternoon with a new podcast. I will talk to you next week.